having, even that was not exactly the terminology that was used, but we understood that you could expose your body to certain difficult for you to do your driving responsibly. And the truth of the matter is, I don't know that I've ever done any kind of driving except distracted driving. Now you know what it's like to have good sermon listening. But it's dangerous, and we recognize that. It's also true, however, that we never believe that we're doing it. If I pull out my cell phone while I'm driving down the road because I feel it go buzz in my pocket, and I think, well, you know, I'm on a lonely stretch of road right here. I'll just glance right quick. Not like I'm going to text. I'm not going to type anything out. But for that brief moment, I'm distracted, right? And so far, obviously, I'm still alive. I've not, as far as I know, run anybody else off the road. I myself have not run off the road. But I was thinking today as we were driving to Hohenwald, which my good brother Marty calls Hole in the Wall because he wasn't aware of the existence of a place called Hohenwald. But when I was driving there, I was aware even for that, you know, for that millisecond when I see something over on the side of the road and my eyes get focused on that, how quick it is that I can begin to drift. Well, that's important. It's important for the safety of myself and my family and for others. But it pales by comparison to what the kinds of distractions that we sometimes see can do to us spiritually. What is the danger of distraction? We see things like this on social media, right? Times when somebody took their eyes off the road for just a moment, and then something tragic takes place. And we are thankful that that's not us. We are sorry for them, perhaps. And we purpose that we would never do anything that would put ourselves or others at risk. But the distractions continue. Distraction is an ongoing problem. And the issue is a lack of focus. Think about ways that distraction affects us very negatively. It affects us, for example, in wasted time, wasted opportunities, neglected relationships, and susceptibility to temptation. When we're on our A game, most of these things don't bother us. When we are giving all of our time and attention to the things that we ought to be giving it to, then we are able to do what we need to do. We prioritize our families. We give people appropriate attention when they're talking to us. We acknowledge there are moments where something good needs to be done, and we do it when we're not distracted. The problem is it's difficult to sustain that over time. Now, I'm going to argue that focus is the opposite or the antidote to distraction. That's true when we're driving, right? When I have got a five-mile trip, it's 8.5 miles from my house to my office. If I were to wake up, this has never happened, but if I were to wake up in the morning, get in my car and say, I'm really going to focus on my driving all the way to the office. Some of you are pretty disturbed that that's never happened, okay? I'm just saying, I haven't gone through that series of thought processes. You know, I try to be a responsible driver, but never do I say, okay, it's Monday. Today, during that 8.5 miles, I am really going to drive. I'm going to drive in the most responsible way possible. You know, the way you drove when you were taking your driver's test. You know, I mean, boy, was I on the job that day. I don't know if I did all that well, but I gave it the entire Mark Blackwelder effort. If we drove like that all of our lives, probably we would be less likely to put ourselves and others at risk because we're just giving ourselves completely to it. The problem is, over time, we believe that we have driving muscle memory. You know, that we're going to do, you know, just as a matter of course, we're going to drive right. We're going to do about right. And we have those times where we, you know, we think about other things along the way and nothing bad happened. And the more nothing bad happens, the more we feel like nothing bad is going to happen. The problem is, when we think about our walk with God, bad things can happen when we are not focused. And so what I want us to do for just a few minutes tonight is to see what the Scriptures have to say about focus. And I'll bring you first to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. Yeah, there it is. Though we walk in the flesh, Paul says, we are not waging war according to the flesh, for the weapons of our warfare are not the flesh, but we have divine power to destroy strongholds. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God and take every thought captive to obey Christ, being ready to punish every disobedience when your obedience is complete. Now, Paul here is talking about his desire, along with others, to provide leadership in such a way that everybody else's opinion, every other thing which could possibly be thought, is subjected to the knowledge of Christ. In other words, what things God wants us to think reign in all of our decision making. And we all want that, don't we? We all want to do those kinds of things. We want to think those kinds of things which result in us being submissive to God. I have an opinion. God has opinion. His opinion wins. That's taking every thought captive. Paul says, I like to have love and peace with my brothers and sisters, but sometimes wrong things happen, and I know I have to address that. That's taking every thought captive. But this phrase that's used here, that's on the screen highlighted right now, taking every thought captive, I'd like for us to expand our understanding of what that would do to our life. In other words, what if we were much more thoughtful and purposeful about the way we approach our life with God? What would that look like? I'm going to give you 5 tips, I believe there are 5 of them, if I remember correctly, for taking every thought captive. And the first of them is to think on purpose. Think on purpose. Be very purposeful about the way that we consider the things that we interact with, the way that we make decisions, the kinds of things that we entertain in our thoughts moment by moment. Paul tells the Philippians that the things that are honorable, just, pure, lovely, commendable, excellent, worthy of praise, those kinds of things are the things that we ought to be thinking about. Now, what I find interesting about that is not that he makes this list of things that surely all of us would say, yeah, that's really what we ought to be thinking about. What I find interesting is that Paul seems to be laboring under the apparent illusion that I can control my thoughts. Now, that's sarcastic, and I apologize for the use of sarcasm in that way. But isn't it true that most of us have kind of bought into the world's claim that we just think about what we think about? We're just victims in our own wild runaway train of thinking. If we see something we ought not see, well, we got to think about it in a certain way, right? But Paul says, no, you can choose to think about better things. You can indeed master your thoughts. Who knew? Now, that doesn't necessarily mean we'll be good at it or that we'll get it right every time. But certainly, it would be appropriate for us to give some effort to actually doing that. What would a life look like if we did not just think about what we thought about? If we did not just do whatever came naturally? What if in any given moment we ask ourselves not merely, what would I do here? Or to choose a now old phrase, what would Jesus do? Maybe we might want to consider what Jesus would think about in a particular moment. Where would his thoughts lie? What kinds of things would he entertain in his mind? Can we take every thought captive? It's got to begin by acknowledging that we do indeed, with God's help, have significant power over our thoughts. We ought not give in to that kind of polluted way of thinking that so often seems to come natural for us. Now, I've got several other possible ways that we can do this. All these kinds of things sort of build on one another. So let's move forward and consider ways that we can take our thoughts captive, ways that we can keep our thoughts about those excellent, just, praiseworthy, commendable sorts of things. And the first thing that I would suggest that we consider doing is seeking to streamline our thoughts. Is it possible that we think about too many different kinds of things? That we are distracted by whatever happens next? Some of you have heard me talk about before, if I get a day off and I'm just going to spend it at home. I mean, or like a real day off, a day off when I'm not at work, but I'm also not supposed to be going someplace else or on a vacation or whatever. If I'm just at home, here's how the day usually goes. Today, I think to myself, I will fix that dripping faucet. Okay, so I go in. I think, okay, I'm going to need some tools to fix the faucet. So I walk out to my shop, and on my way to my workshop to get those tools, I notice that the hose has got a tear in it. So I think, well, while I'm at it, I'll just go ahead and put that splice thing in that hose. And so it's in the shop. So I go out there to get that splice thing. There's probably a technical term for that, but you'll humor me. And so I'm doing it. So I'm out there in the shop. Good grief. The last time I went out there, I just was in a rush right before I had to go somewhere. So I put a bunch of stuff out on the bench. It's in the way. So I'll put all those tools up. Do you see how this is going? The day ends. The faucet's still dripping. I tried to do too much. I was distracted by all the other things. Now, I may or may not have actually fixed several things over the course of the day, but I didn't prioritize that at all. I was just allowing myself to be tossed to and fro by every wind of household appliance repair. That's not actually what James mentions in James chapter 1, but I think you get the idea. We tend to get very distracted. Paul says that we ought not be, excuse me, Jesus says we ought not be anxious about anything because every day kind of has enough trouble of its own. Now think about this. What Jesus is urging us to do as he completes this section on anxiety, inappropriate worry, he says, you know, I know you've got a lot of things to worry about. You've got your physical life to worry about. Maybe you've got the concerns of the future that you're not exactly sure what to do about. And Jesus concludes this section in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 34 by saying, every day has its own trouble. I still have, this is one of those verses I still have memorized in the King James Version. Sufficient unto today is the evil thereof, right? Every day kind of has a set of stuff that you may be able to manage. How much of the difficulties we have with our thoughts are a result of trying to manage more than one day's worth of stuff? Being overwhelmed in our thoughts by things that are beyond our capacity to process. You've heard me say before that I'm not a big fan of the term multitasking. I tend to refer to it as alternatasking. We just do a variety of different things. We do them in rapid succession. We think we're thinking about them all at once, but we really can't do that. The human brain has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time and to do that reasonably well. When we try to take on too much, then we are likely to do badly in terms of controlling our thoughts and doing the kinds of things with our minds that God has called us to do. And so, be careful, says Jesus, lest you try to take on more than you can reasonably accomplish. Second of all, in terms of thinking the way that we ought to think, it's helpful to think about what we need to tune into. We have decisions about that, right? We are not in control of every sound that exists in our world. So far, so good. The rain that's pouring down on the good old ark at this time is not deafening. But we've all been here when it was, when we were completely out of control of what things sounded like in this room. The truth is, our world is full of things blasting down on top of our roof. Constant cacophony of noises of various kinds, many of them demanding, or at least attempting to demand, our time, our focus, our heed. Which do we listen to? Well, obviously, we have a lot of voices in the world, and quite obviously as well, they're not of all equal value. Now, I'll turn here to 1 Samuel chapter 2 as Samuel gets his call from God. Now, the truth is, in this occasion, as far as I know, things were probably pretty quiet. But what Samuel needed to do at that time, by Eli's advice, is really exactly the same thing that we always need to do, loud or quiet. Samuel is told by Eli after the second call, he said, listen, the next time you hear that, you just say, speak, Lord, your servant is listening. That was the beginning of a life which was very much focused on hearing God. Can I suggest that we need to tune in? As I've gotten older, my hearing is not as good, and I have to be a lot more purposeful to make sure I hear things than I used to be. Hearing seemed to be so easy that I hardly ever had to think about it. Now I have to think about it. I sometimes have to control my attention. Sometimes I even have to try to work to control my environment. For example, I have realized that I hear people a lot better when they're facing me. So I now intentionally try to position myself in a way so that I can listen to people with them facing me. I don't think I'm reading lips. I just am. It's just that sound is directed toward me. Doug has had an interesting phenomenon over the last couple of weeks where one of his ears, he can't really hear of it all. You hear any better out of it? A little bit better? So when you do that, you know, if you want to hear, you just kind of turn your head, right? Or maybe even get on the other side of somebody. Many of you have had ear infections or something like that, and things have just kind of closed up, and you're right, okay, things are not the same as they used to be. I'm going to have to be a bit more purposeful. How do we get to be more purposeful in listening to God? Well, the same way. Maybe it's a matter of positioning. Maybe it's a matter of putting yourself in the spot where you are listening intently to Him. Maybe it's a matter of minimizing the volume of some of the other voices. I also cannot hear very well if there's any background noise at all. So if Dana was to say something to me, I mute the television. Because as much as I love her, as much as I'd rather listen to her than anything else, sometimes her voice just cannot compete with some of that other noise. So that's something I have to intentionally do. We need to make sure that God's is the loudest voice that we hear. We need to intentionally put ourselves in relation to Him where we can listen to His Word. We need to make sure that other voices, other noises that are out there get turned down so His volume is comparatively higher. Our lives are so full of all kinds of other things, especially in these days of ever-present screens of various kinds. Social media along with television and other things like that. People in our lives who have their own needs and want to make sure that you try to meet them. And even Satan, just as he did for Adam and Eve all those hundreds of years ago, will still ask for us to listen to him instead. We need to focus. We need to make sure that we take every thought captive so that we hear God above all else. Jonah's an interesting case, isn't he? For a variety of reasons, I sometimes refer to him as the successful unmissionary. He just does not have the missionary heart. The results are difficult to argue with. He preaches to 120,000 people. Every single one of them respond to the invitation. Repenting, sackcloth and ashes from the king all the way down. He goes out on the hillside just above the city of Nineveh in Assyria and pouts. And he basically says to God, I told you this was going to happen. That's the reason why I ran away to begin with. Why don't you just kill me now? I'd rather die than have these results. Now, I got to tell you, if I'd have been the Lord, I'd have been tempted to give him what he asked for. Fortunately, the Lord is a better person than I am. That's maybe the understatement of all time. But is that really what he wanted? Maybe. But just as likely, it's the case that he was just thinking badly at that moment. The truth is, he's plagued by stinking thinking throughout his entire period of service here. He hates the Ninevites. He hates the people of Assyria because they have come into Israel, beaten them up and stole their lunch money. He does not want any dealings with them whatsoever. He wants them to pay for their sins. He's placed himself in God's seat. He has judged them and said, this is what they deserve. God, go ahead and give it to them. Much surprised, he finds out that God intends instead to give them an opportunity to change. His thoughts stink. Then later on, after God does indeed give them an opportunity to change and perish the thought, they actually respond to that in an appropriate way. Now, he has to think nice about them, but he is unwilling to do so. All the way through, Jonah has a mind that is opposed to the mind of God. He thinks he knows what's best, and so he pursues a course of action that he believes will keep God from doing what he thinks God's going to make a mistake by doing. Have you ever done that? We think we know best, right? And so we expect God to behave in ways that are consistent with our will, which is ironic and ludicrous. And then when God refuses to behave in ways that are according to our will, we begin to question whether or not He's really as smart as we thought He was. Stinking thinking. When we begin to wish ill for people and situations, or when we wish ill for ourselves, or we think things are as bad as they can possibly be, and we think we've been mistreated, and we're all pitiful, and having a party about that, God would say, don't you understand? Let me zoom out just a little bit to this 120,000 people that you were so quick to condemn. Do you see that I love them, that I feel about them in ways that right now you have better feelings toward that gourd vine that was here one day and gone the next than I have about this nation of people who didn't know the right hand from their left, spiritually speaking? We need to avoid stinking thinking. Finally, we need to learn to discern. Learn to discern. This is actually a phrase that Jesse used in some lessons two, three, 4 years ago, which I thought were really, really helpful. Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, urge us to not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of our mind. Finding ways to realign our thinking with God's thinking. Developing the skill of looking intently at things and asking the right questions about those things so that we can decide what is best. So now we come full circle to exactly what Paul was urging the Philippians do in Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8, where we learn to start thinking the right things at the right time in the right ways because our thinking has matured. Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 that it is a natural thing to think and behave like a child when you're a child. It is a very unnatural thing, an inappropriate thing, to continue to think like a child when you are not a child. And yet, sometimes, spiritually speaking, we get stuck in that endless loop of selfish thinking, of short-sightedness, of discaution. Is that a word? I may have made that up. A lack of caution, a lack of attention to the things that matter most. And when we do that, we are operating without discernment. When Balaam was on his donkey heading to check out, maybe he needed to give Balak just a little more attention there. Maybe he's got a point. I'll go at least check it out. And the donkey turns out to be a more discerning thinker than Balaam does. God would say, really? This is the level at which you're thinking? Now, as I look at my own life and think about my lack of discernment, I wish I could say that when I was a child, I thought as a child, but now I've become a man, I put away childish things. But you know what? Sometimes we still can revert back to some of that wrong thinking in a variety of ways. So let me urge us this week to begin to work hard to train our minds, to not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of our minds. There is certainly a sense in which what happens at the time that we become children of God changes and transforms us in a powerful way. We were old, now we've died, we're new. But it's also true that sanctification of the heart and of the mind, thought processes that are more holy and more discerning, are something that we will continue to work on through the rest of our lives. So this week, let me challenge us to think about our thinking, to take every thought captive to Christ so that we will make better decisions, so that we'll be more thoughtful in the way that we interact with others, so that we will get more godly results in the way that we interact with a variety of situations. That's a big homework assignment, isn't it? It's okay if you don't get it all right this week. But just as with most things that we seek to improve in, one step in that direction at a time can lead us to a destination, or at least closer to a destination than we've ever been before. Take every thought captive this week. When you think about how you're going to react to situations, stop for just a moment and say, let me get my hands on that thought. Let me make sure that that's what I want to do, rather than reacting in reflex. When we're making our plans, say, okay, ambition of a certain sort is fine, but am I going beyond what God would have me to be thinking about related to that? As I am deciding what priorities are going to be for this week, let me take those thoughts captive and make sure they are in harmony with the will of God. As we come to the end of another lesson, we also come to another opportunity. It may well be that the thoughts that you need to take captive right now are the ones that relate to your decision to serve self or God. Just as he did with Eve and with Adam, Satan would urge you to put yourself on the throne. You be the smart one. You let your thoughts carry the day. And I think God would call out to you right now to allow him to take control of your life. Give it to him voluntarily. Is there a response that you need to make to God tonight? Take every thought captive. If you need to come to him, if you need to come back to him, if you need to release some of the stinking thinking that has characterized your life and turn yourself and your thoughts over to God, would you purpose to do that? And if we can help you in any way, would you let us know by coming as we stand and sing together?